Welcome back to Money and Politics in Delaware. New voice, new guest to the program. Welcome, Catherine Witherspoon.
Thank you, Dave. Hi, nice to be here.
You're an attorney, and you're an attorney in Delaware with Alfred Kerman, and you're a big fan of the show, but and a listener, so you know how we play the game. 30 seconds about you and 30 seconds about your practice.
Great. Yes, Dave, I've been admitted in Delaware since 1995. Offutt Kerman is a 140 attorney, full service regional firm. We have offices between Virginia and New York. I graduated Duke undergrad and NYU Law School, and I practice employment law, mostly on the defense side, advising companies on best practices, as well as education law, representing students.
And as I've been plugging you in the first segment, our topic today is sexual harassment. So tell us, smart attorney, what is the legal definition of sexual harassment?
Well, we have two types of sexual harassment under Title VII. We have one type, which is hostile work environment, which is pretty much what's been in the press lately. And then we have another type called quid pro quo, which translates to something for something. That's a really much easier, more obvious example for people. Basically, you have to show the plaintiff was an employee of or applied for a job with a company. The alleged harasser, who was an officer or employee of the company, made unwanted sexual advances to the plaintiff or engaged in other verbal or physical conduct of a sexual nature. Certain job benefits were conditioned by words or conduct on the plaintiff's acceptance of the harasser's sexual advances or conduct. For instance, hey, baby, don't you want this job? Let's just lie down on the couch for a couple minutes. At the time of the conduct, the alleged harasser was a supervisor or agent for the company. The plaintiff was harmed by the conduct, and the harasser's conduct was a substantial factor in causing the plaintiff's harm. That sounds a lot more complicated than it really is. Basically, it's the scenario I just mentioned about, hey, let's go lay down on the director's couch. I'll hire you if you go along with this, or I'll keep you employed if you go along with this. Now, what's a little more tricky is this hostile work environment type. And to make out a claim for hostile work environment on the basis of sex, a plaintiff has to establish that he or she suffered intentional discrimination because of the sex of the person. The discrimination was severe or pervasive, and this is where reasonable minds disagree. The discrimination detrimentally affected the plaintiff, and the plaintiff was affected in a bad way. It would detrimentally affect a reasonable person in like circumstances. Again, what's a reasonable person? And the existence of respondeat superior liability, which means the harasser was an employee, basically, of the employer at issue. That's fancy lawyer talk for the person had to have worked for the employer when they harass you to hold the employer liable for the harassment.
All right. And in our pre-interview, you said you hope the audience understood two key points. Let's do them one at a time. First of all, and everybody sitting on the edge of their chair, the company is liable.
Correct. That's why I am involved, because I represent companies who have to make sure that their employees are complying with the law and don't do things which might expose them to liability for these things. It is not the exposure to liability of the harasser. The harasser could be sued separately, perhaps for offensive touching, or criminal charges could be brought if it rose to that level. But the liability is on the company.
Wow. Now, it is no secret I'm a big fan of Catherine Witherspoon, but despite all the legal stuff, I'm often reminded that a jury of reasonable people said O.J. Simpson was innocent. So the threshold is reasonable person, says Catherine Witherspoon. Explain that to the audience.
Right. That's the other thing I wanted to make sure that came across. A jury is going to make this decision. In most cases, a person is going to bring a claim in court, and the court is going to decide whether that claim meets the elements that I set forth, Was there intentional discrimination? Was it severe or pervasive? Did it detrimentally affect the plaintiff? So sometimes a court would throw out the claim before it even got to a jury and say, like, look, this person made five remarks to the alleged plaintiff, the harassee, and over the course of 5 months, and that's not enough. It's not detrimentally effective. It's not severe or pervasive, and then kick it out. But in a lot of cases, the person is going to get to a jury, and then we have a jury sitting there, and are they reasonable? Do they agree on a reasonable person standard? Who knows? It really depends who's sitting in the jury box, what people are going to decide, what was okay behavior and what wasn't okay behavior.
Yeah, stay with that, because in the last day or two, there was a Yahoo article, courtesy Drudge, that quoted a Reuters study. When asked about unwanted compliments about your appearance, for example, 38% of adults said this amounted to sexual harassment, while 47% it did not. Some 41% of adults said that it was sexual harassment when somebody told you dirty jokes, but 44% said it was not. 44% of adults said that non-consensual hugging was sexual harassment, while 40% was not. Keep talking, Catherine.
So I think that all of the above should be part of the counseling and training given by an employer to avoid liability for sexual harassment suits. I think that there's no reason to give unwanted compliments. There's no reason to tell dirty jokes. There's no reason even to curse in the workplace. There's no reason to ever give someone a hug in the workplace, unless they're your dear friend, and you know that they're your dear friend. But even in the workplace, come on, who needs to hug people? So I think all of the above, it would be safer to just counsel and train people to avoid completely.
All right, let's go a different way just a minute. Two people are competing for a hypothetical job. One might hypothetically think he or she was sexually harassed by the other, obviously for self-gain under my hypothetical. I'm long-winded to a basic question. How do you stop the dubious claims?
Right. There really is nothing you can do as an employer about dealing with dubious claims. The employer's duty is clear. They have to investigate every claim that's made. And whether the investigation reveals that the person can only come up with a couple of remarks or one alleged incident and there's no one to corroborate any of the evidence, then you're safe in going forward and saying, this is not real.
Let me interrupt you just a second, because we're going to run out of time. Tick-tock on that clock, and that is pulling a private conversation and putting it on the air, Catherine Witherspoon says to me, it's gone too far. I found that fascinating. Share that with the audience.
I do not want people with legitimate claims to be sidelined because too many people are coming forward with things like, he said things to me on a daily basis, or he or she touched me once or twice on the shoulder. I don't want people to fall under the spell of the boy who cried wolf. I want people to take these claims seriously, and when things who come up which are not serious, it diminishes the power of the actual person who comes forward with the courage to report real harassment.
We got 30 seconds, no more. What has to change?
I think that there should be more bright line tests. I think there, honestly, for instance, should be a bright line test. The court should say, look, you touch someone at work and they don't like it, that's it. That's enough. That's severe and pervasive. And if it affected the person's employment in a negative way, that is sexual harassment.
I got to turn to the audience. It's Catherine Witherspoon. I found her fascinating. We've already got a date in February where she's going to join us on yet another subject. Her direct dial, Catherine, I need help here. 302-351-0902. Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Again, we have her coming back in a couple of weeks. I got to turn to the audience. And let's see, when we come back from break, economist John Stapleford talks about the county's finances, at least the numbers. Are you ready for a tax increase, Newcastle County? We will be right back.